So the Electoral Integrity Project is a nonpartisan academic organization to measure the quality of elections around the world, and looking at all the different things that go into an election process. So the rules of the game, the access to registration and to voting, the counting of votes, the announcement of results, and any form of adjudication or protest that can be lodged. So basically, it's a metric to look at all the moving parts of an election process and say what's working, what's not working, how representative is the government that is produced from the elections, and sort of gives you an overall feel for the quality of the election moment, which is one part of democracy. And, you know, the Election Integrity Project was initially set up to study elections in the developing world, new democracies, but very quickly it became interesting to apply the methodology to established democracies in Europe and in Latin America and in the South Pacific. And so since 2012, it's done about two-thirds of the world's elections, two-thirds of the world's countries. And then this year, they decided to do a large investigation of the quality of the U.S. elections in November. And also, they had the capacity to dig down to all 50 states. So not just look at the quality of the overall national elections, but look at the quality of individual state elections and see what was working well and what was working poorly, and basically give us some idea about the areas in which we need to improve on.
And so we don't have a whole lot of data to be able to go back and kind of assess any types of trends, I would assume. And this was quite a year to kind of jump into the U.S. election cycle for this. But were there any things that stood out to you as far as a surprise about some of these numbers that you saw upon trying to kind of digest these and find out what they actually mean?
Well, I have to say that a couple of the indicators performing poorly in our state weren't too surprising. Issues about voter registration and access to the polls had problems, and we've had a long history of some communities having trouble voting and being marginalized from voting. So that wasn't as surprising. The legal framework and the whole setup of the elections had some issues too. And again, that wasn't surprising. But I tell you what was surprising to me was just how poorly we in North Carolina scored on fair and democratic district boundaries. We didn't just perform badly, we performed as the worst state in the union and the worst ever entity ranked by the Electoral Integrity Project. So they've never come across a place that had less democratic election boundaries, and the extent of the failure of that for our election system was, to me, really problematic and really quite shocking.
And when you're saying those district boundaries, we're talking about the legislative districts, congressional districts that have been gerrymandered and in some ways already even ruled unconstitutional, right?
Yeah, no, that's right. And, you know, there are a whole series of pernicious effects of that. But the biggest one is just the lack of competition. It means that every legislator, bar a handful, are beholden to the extremes of their party voter base, their party leaders, and they're not beholden to the people. When you don't have competition, then you rely upon your place in the legislature to your party and to the more extreme voters of your district. And that, I think, is the biggest problem there, because it just leads to a whole host of other bad consequences.
Yeah, and that seems like it would be something that would further the polarization and just general divide that we seem to have developed over the last few years. Is that a fair kind of assessment of that, or is there something else there?
No, I think absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, if the districts were drawn where there were far more competitive seats, And frankly, Democrats and Republicans were really, you know, capable of winning a whole bunch of seats throughout North Carolina. Then every candidate, whether they be Democrat, whether they be Republican, would need to appeal to the center ground. They would have to be fairly moderate. They would have to argue for policies that weren't offensive to large portions of the population. So I think redistricting and the creating of districts that are competitive and not partisan would really change the mindset of politicians and really deeply change the dynamic of politics that we have right now. I mean, we are very polarized. People are meeting in the public space, meeting in the public market, and talking about politics anymore. We are sort of a divided state, and that's a problem because we don't have any mechanism of just working through our issues in the public sphere. Now everything has become, you know, attacks in the media, polarized news announcements from various parties, and we're not sitting down in the legislature or sitting down in our family rooms or in our churches or in our sporting fields and talking about politics. I think the tone has been set from Raleigh, and it's really detrimental to a quality of life in Carolina.
One interesting thing about this that I'm seeing as we're trying to, you know, kind of figure out how we got here and everything is that while you said North Carolina ranks, you know, horribly low in the district boundaries category, overall, there are actually, if I'm counting correctly, 12 states that rank lower than North Carolina on the electoral integrity, just overall value. Is that a statement of a larger problem across the country here, that North Carolina may be a focal point for certain portions of this, but for 12 states to still rank below North Carolina seems to be quite staggering?
Yeah, so, I mean, you're looking at numbers that are focused very much on the election process. And there are some states where the actual problems of the functioning of elections are, you know, could be argued to be even worse than North Carolina. But at the end of the day, what my op-ed and what other people have been saying is that you've got to add the election moment to the other moments of our government. Elections don't determine all of democracy, but they are a significant part. So the problem with North Carolina is that whilst it doesn't have the worst election quality in 2016, there are other issues. The power grab by the Republicans last week in the legislature, the marginalization of African Americans and Latinos from voting capacity, the general polarization of the legislature over HB2, all of those things add up, along with the election quality, to make North Carolina a pretty poor example of functioning democracy. Now, I don't think that North Carolina is unique. I don't think it's the only state with these problems. I just think that we, like many times in history, are emblematic of bigger trends in American life and society. North Carolina was sort of emblematic of the struggle for civil rights in the 50s and 60s. We're now becoming emblematic of the new battle lines of the sort of war for the American soul, the American political cultural life. And so Carolina isn't unique, but it just demonstrates all the problems that can face a government when it sort of atrophies to this point of illegitimacy amongst the eyes of the voters.
Well, I guess the last question that I had for you is one that a lot of people are working on to try to find out that this answer, but where do we go from here? How do we get back to having faith and trust in the outcome of the election and not be either engaged only in these kind of echo chambers that we have set up, or for some people just being disengaged because they don't feel that it's going to have any kind of an influence on the outcome?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's a question that I've been asked a lot over the last few days. And a lot of people, I think, feel frustrated and they feel somewhat impotent about their ability to change things. To me, the metaphor is that we're in a car, we're going in the wrong direction, and we need we need to turn it around. Now, you don't turn it around all at once. You have to take things on the bend and move piece by piece until you can face the other direction. So I think that the biggest challenge for us right now is to identify what is the most important thing to be done to get us back heading in the right direction, and really try and encourage our leaders to focus on those issues. And to me, that is districting. And I know this is a issue that has come up for decades, really, in North Carolina, but I'm wondering if now it's an issue whose time has come. Suddenly, it's ignited in the popular imagination. It's no longer a sort of wonky technical issue. And districting, I think, if it was successfully reformed in North Carolina, would change a lot of the dynamics. And then we could move on to improving our quality of life and democracy in other areas. So I think it's not trying to take on everything at once, not trying to change the state and the world overnight, but just pick off the most important thing and channel your efforts into that and really get behind a fair, neutral, nonpartisan, independent districting commission that would draw the lines in Carolina to give voters the ability to choose really between two candidates or three candidates, not just have one candidate on the ballot.
I think that's something that's really interesting because there has been some movement, even not just grassroots movement, but in the legislature just this last year, a couple of bills introduced to introduce that commission that had a couple of different kinds of timelines, and it has even gotten through the House, I believe, back a couple of years ago, already passed through the state House, but does not appear that it's going to move anywhere until Phil Berger changes his mind over whether it will or not. So not sure if there is going to be any kind of movement on that. Whenever you have one person that can really make or break this situation, like Phil Berger just quite honestly can in this case, what does that say to you?
Well, the same is true of HB2 in the sense that there is no empirical reason for passing a measure that is both politically negative for the Republicans, very negative for the state, and also penalizes and marginalizes a proportion of our Tar Heel population. But it came down to individuals. It came down to Phil Berger. It came down to Tim Moore. It came down to the players on that floor in Raleigh and the personal dynamics between them and the Democrats. And I think a lot of these issues are now being played out almost in the living room rather than on the larger stage. There's a little bit of a sickness in our central governing leadership circles, and that's the thing that needs to be addressed, because I think a lot of people in Carolina would support redistricting. Certainly we know a lot of people support the repeal of HB2, but we're not getting through to that leadership base in Raleigh, and the only way that is going to happen, I think, is if those leaders like Berger and like Moore see a partisan advantage in change and reform. So until they see some reason to bring about a nonpartisan commission or repeal HB2, they're not going to do it. The only other option is for them to be voted out of office. But of course, the rules of the game make it incredibly difficult for the Republicans to be voted out because they already have the game stacked in their advantage.